And welcome into another edition of the Grapple Talk. Your hosts, Nick Ragner and Jesse Von Raspberry to my left. We haven't been in the office for quite some time, and our network has kind of taken a dip in shows, I guess. Production? We haven't had a show for like 2 weeks.
Well, that's okay. You know, it's like we've been very busy. I mean, you and me have been watching the G1 very religiously. Jordy Lee, he's been busy, man. He won the WPW Heavyweight Championship and AC Riley.
Busy guy.
I don't know what he's doing.
Well, I do know for anybody that's listening, depending on when the other shows drop, we actually do have a Deech and Dash episode that'll be coming out here over the next couple of days. And also, we have a new show that we're going to be introducing to the Grapple Talk Network.
Yeah, this one's actually pretty interesting. It's a video game based show, actually hosted by Maru.
Yeah. Well, I don't think Maru. I think Red Guy Gaming. He wanted to keep his wrestling persona and his gaming persona separate.
Okay, so
just ruined it, Jesse.
Oh yeah, it broke kayfabe, right?
He broke kayfabe, but now everybody knows him as. Business. I mean, we talk about it during the first episode. Red Guy Gaming. It's what's his gamer
Reg
tag?
Guy?
Reg, like regular.
So R E G.
Yeah.
And then Guy.
Yeah. Gaming. Yeah. And basically what it is
that's
we're
a whole
gonna,
lot of G's.
It's a lot of G's. We're going to talk about gaming, things like that. We did the pilot episode, I guess you could call it, after River City Championship Wrestling's last show on Friday. Basically me and Red Guy sat down at a table, and we were joined by a couple of the other wrestlers that also frequent video games, and we just literally talked about what we liked about video games, what we didn't like about them, some of the things that we've enjoyed playing over the past couple of years. And it was a good conversation. You know, we've always talked about adding more content to the Grapple Talk Network, and I think this is perfect because for me at least, you know, gaming can go hand in hand with wrestling because it's all about storytelling at the end of the day. And you know, we may not want to admit it, or maybe we do, but I believe a lot of us that work in the business are nerds. So
I would say almost about everyone right now in the business is nerds. Have you gone to a show recently and not seen someone wearing a comic book related
I've never,
t-shirt?
That always happens.
You know, which is also interesting, too, because, like, right now you're in the middle of your YouTube walkthroughs for video games.
Yeah.
Like, the Zoma thing, man, this is really kind of taken off. Tell me, like, how the hell did you get that started? Because, dude, man, you're freaking me out when you do this.
No, I just, I actually was just on the PlayStation Network one day, and I was looking up games that I maybe want to purchase, and I saw this Soma game. It was like $4.99 on the PlayStation Network, pretty cheap. But if you look up a bunch of different lists, you know, how we like our top five, top ten lists, Soma is widely regarded as one of the best horror games to come out for the PlayStation 4 ever.
And for a good reason.
Yeah, I mean, it started as a PC game and it got ported over to the PlayStation 4, but yeah, just really good storytelling, a terrifying game, and I got it for $4.99, so I just decided to start video commentating on it because, you know, I think the best part about video game commentating is that it gives me the opportunity to share these experiences, whether I get, you know, one view or I get 30 views or if I get a million views, which probably will never happen, but you know, I was playing BioShock before that, and I already played it, so I wanted to play Soma because I didn't know anything about the story, like nothing about it, so I got to, you know, experience this with the videos, and it's been a lot of fun so far, and, you know, I just dropped another episode, actually, not even 20 minutes ago, and I'll probably be recording another one tonight after we get done with Grapple Talk, so.
Man, you are, like, all over the place with this multimedia thing.
yeah, a little bit.
No, it's like you get out of the news business, and then all of a sudden you're just like jonesing for it, and now you're all over like so many different platforms. It's crazy, Nick.
Yeah, I know. We do the podcast for the for here. I did the podcast with our Red Guy Gaming's, and I'm gonna screw that up.
Yeah.
Now I'm doing the video game
commentaries. Doing the business, brother.
Now, and it's, you know, trying to get back into doing commentating and stuff like that. You know, doing the news is one thing, but it's a lot more fun in my book when you get to be able to freely express yourself through those mediums, like a commentating or like a podcast, like we're doing right now. That's what I enjoy about it, instead of, you know, being held to those strict guidelines.
But yeah, definitely. I mean, you have a potty mouth, Nick.
Oh my gosh, I cuss a lot, man.
You do, man.
My
you
gosh.
Do. Like half the preview that you put up was boo.
I originally didn't censor any of it, and then I was like, man, my mom is gonna kill me when she hears how much cussing I did. So I was like,
she's not gonna kill you, man. No one's ever died of soap poisoning.
I gotta throw in the censor bleeps at least for the public Facebook videos. But yeah, you can. I was thinking about making a Facebook page just so I can at least, you know, have a way for people to view those previews when I post them up, just because you got to be my friend on Facebook right now to view them, but
yeah.
I don't know.
Well, you're doing a pretty good job of just, like, popping them out on Twitter as well, because, like, you started actually just, like, randomly name dropping people on your video game commentaries and stuff like that. You must have dropped my name, because all of a sudden, like, I got five or six different, like, weirdos, like, follow me on Twitter. And it's all, like, I'm looking through, and I'm like, this guy follows you. And I'm just like, what the fuck?
Nice.
You know? And I'm just like, wow, you must have a loyal following of, like, weirdos now.
Yeah, yeah, I guess I kind of do. Who knows? It's all about networking, you know? I'm a part of a few gaming commentary groups on Facebook.
Like, there's actual groups for this too?
Yeah, I'm part of like six of them. Yeah. And I was just like, I mean, I don't know everybody in them, but you know, like one group has like 15,000 people in it. Another group has like 100, another group has 20. But yeah, it's about networking and getting some of those people to watch your videos, because then they'll share them and all the other fun stuff. So I'm just getting started. I started doing it 2 weeks ago, but hopefully it turns into bigger, better things. If it doesn't, like, I'm okay with it. It's kind of similar to this podcast. If you look up our latest podcast that we did a couple of weeks ago where we buried Battleground, has like 7 downloads. Now, I think part of that is because for some reason it didn't get uploaded to iTunes, and
we
couldn't figure it out. Me and AC were trying to figure out why it wouldn't go on iTunes. We literally took it down, reposted it, and it still wouldn't pop up on iTunes. So it was weird.
That is really goofy, because that episode might have been us at its most vicious.
It was a good episode.
We were
vicious
as fuck, man.
Yeah, it was a good episode.
We kind of really tore into them.
Yeah, if you haven't had the chance to listen to that one, I don't know how you – I mean, you can't listen to it on iTunes, which I think is the most convenient way to do it, you know, because not everybody has a Podbean app.
You think it's because we actually really buried the WWE on it?
I don't think so.
You think, like, Vince McMahon's like, God damn it, grapple talk.
No, that stuff was pretty mild to probably what you'd hear on, like, a Vince Russo show or whatever, but I don't know. It was a good episode, and, you know, if you haven't had the chance to listen to it yet, and if this episode's even on iTunes, because who knows, maybe iTunes pulled our plug. I don't know. But, yeah, check it out, because I thought it was an overall good content, and, you know, I think it's pretty funny listening to us get hot about stuff, even if it's outdated.
And if you know iTunes pulled our plug, fuck Apple.
Fuck Apple.
Yeah, fuck them right in the ass. Straight up PC, man.
No.
Only at work.
I don't agree with
At work.
Only at work.
Only at work, you know.
Big weekend this past weekend for River City Championship
Wrestling.
Yeah,
it was a really good weekend. You guys actually had a big show come up in River City Championship Wrestling. A light crowd, though. So I got to ask, like, how does that affect performances in the ring when you look out there and there is more empty chairs than butts and seats?
I'm gonna be honest with you, dude. Like, I'm obviously not an in-ring performer, but you know, I manage, and it's you feel almost like you can't be as, and this is just me, and maybe I'm just talking out of my ass, but I feel like I can't be like as colorful. You know what I mean? It's just like when you have like those selected fans, you know. I think the age-old adage of saying you work the same in front of 5 people as you do in front of 500 is actually bullshit. I don't think that's true at all. While that's a good mindset to have and it sounds good on the cover of a book, I don't necessarily think that's absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, because I'm not saying like I'm some god manager, actually. In fact, I if you ever talk with me, I talk pretty poorly of myself, but I think it's just difficult sometimes. You know, if you have a lighter crowd, especially if they're a quiet crowd, it's hard to really get a feel for the match, and you know, there's a lot of dead air, and I don't know. It's just tough. Luckily, though, this show wasn't like that. I mean, there was a light crowd, but at the same time, they were all really loud. We had a lot of the regulars there, like your Bob Coveys, who were really into it and made it enjoyable. But it's just, yeah, it sucks for RCCW because they were on that high of having, like, it seemed like hundreds at every show, and now the past couple of shows, it's been like 30, 40, 50 people. And I think for a morale, it's hard to sometimes bounce back from that. You know, it's like you keep setting up these huge shows, right? You have these big main events, Kyle Roberts, Darren Corbin. You know, you're plugging it like crazy. RCCW, I will say, as much as I hate to give AC Riley credit, does have probably one of the best social media games in Wisconsin pro wrestling right now. And you see all the work that they put into it, and then you go to the show, and there's like 30 people there. And it's like, man. You know, you feel like you have all these people spending their free time cutting promos. They're coming from across the state. You're booking a guy like Darren Corbin. You're booking Stacy Shadows and Sierra to work in the Heartbreakers division. Like, you have all this really cool big stuff, and then you get to the show and only like, you know, 30 people showed up to pay tickets. So it's not like it's necessarily, you know, oh, we're gonna work less hard, or oh, we're gonna not do our normal shtick. But it's just like, for me, I think it's because since I have such a close connection with those guys at RCCW, I see that small draw and I just go like, man, it just feels like, you know, all the hard work that's been put into trying to make this something big is just for naught. Because regardless of how loud the crowd is, regardless of how good the action is in the ring, at the end of the day, I think you can agree with this. It always comes down to the dollars, right?
Oh, yeah, dollars.
Always comes down to the dollars.
Because if you think about it, no matter what, if you're running a business and your business is to draw a crowd and you're not drawing a crowd, you're not doing something right. It was one of those weird things, too. So, like, I always hit up the same laundromat. Like, my laundromat over on Caledonia Street, that's my laundromat, man. I love that place. You know, it's like it's great because, like, it's number one, it's easy to get to. The machines are great. It's always $1.75 for a machine. It's always like, you know, seven and a half minutes for a quarter on a dryer.
Right south of Uptown.
Yep. South of Uptown. Really nice. What's always goofy though about that place is like the bulletin board. Always. Anytime there's an RCCW show, there is always a poster there. Doesn't matter like 3-4 weeks in advance, there's always a poster. Last two times I went there. So after the Riverfest show to this show, no poster. So I don't know. Maybe it's like their flyer game kind of went down maybe for this show. Because it was the same thing where you start walking past, like other businesses usually have the flyers and stuff like that. Not there.
Yep.
Also, it's always, I think it's difficult, and it's also a cop-out to say, hey, maybe it's like too nice out, man. Maybe we got to shut it down, right, type of thing. But it was very nice. Plus, there was other things going on in town. So it was always kind of a weird thing and nice weird mixture there as well. They do have their big anniversary show coming up in September. Now, this is a big show for them. It's their third anniversary. They're bringing in Blue Pants.
Yep.
Now, which is interesting because I got from like two different people, two different reactions. One was, oh my fucking God, you're bringing in Blue Pants. And my other reaction was, who the fuck is Blue Pants?
Yep, that's your big thing.
So hopefully, you know, Levy Bates, a great character. Does wonderful work. If you get a chance to go see the show, definitely do it because RCCW is going to kill it on the show. They just always do. They always put it in their hearts, bodies, and souls and trying to make it a lacrosse scene possible. But I wonder if you blew your load bringing in guys like the Honky Tonk Band in the early half of the year and stuff like that, you pop that territory with, yep, a good feud with Sadus and Devil and Kane. You pop that territory with the Dojo Boys, and then you take some of your hottest acts and you don't book them again.
Yep.
Right. So I wonder if that has a negative pullback, really, from the fans. They're like, oh, he's not going to be there, so I'm not going to go to that show. Because you almost got to think about it. It's like maybe they were on to something with certain talents, and then you pull them away. Now, I understand you want to kind of keep fans still guessing and still waiting and hoping for these talents. But at the same time, though, these talents were actually popping in territory and stuff like that. Maybe you got to rely on those talents a little bit more. And instead of taking chances on guys who are not a proven draw in that area, take chances on people who are a proven draw.
I agree 100%. You know, I've had people come up to me and say, hey, do you know if the Dojo Boys are coming to the next show? Dojos, regardless of who's listening and regardless what your opinions are on the Dojos, mm-hmm, and regardless if you like to give them shit, but you actually like them, I mean, they, here in lacrosse, are probably one of the hottest acts. Like, let's be honest. It's
hands,
like,
down.
One of the hottest tag teams that are probably the hottest tag team RCCW's ever seen, and one of the hottest acts in general, regardless if it's singles or tag teams in lacrosse, maybe ever. I mean, they were just incredibly over, and booking, you know, opportunities and things like that got all mixed up, and they weren't able to come to shows anymore, and that's kind of where you saw that fall off. But now, you know, you're trying to pick up the pieces with, you know, trying to book all these other talents, and, you know, some things are working, some things aren't working, and that's just the difficulty in it. It's like you're trying to find another diamond in the rough. But I totally agree with you. That's, I know that when you're leaving guys like the Dojos and like a Sadist off the card, that you're really losing out on in-house name value. That being said, I do personally know that Blue Pants, she's coming at a pretty good deal. So that's not necessarily one of those acts that's, mm-hmm, going to be throwing them under. But, you know, I think the biggest thing for RCCW, if their management's listening, which I highly doubt they are, but, man, that flyer game's got to be good. You know, you can, I run a social media page, for a pretty damn big organization in the area. And I'll tell you what, social media game is great, and it's a great way to get news and the word out there. But it's definitely not everything, especially depending on the crowd that you're trying to appeal to. When you look at a RCCW, I think a lot of times what you should be doing is you should be flyering cars at loggers games. You should be putting up posters in bars. You should be getting shout outs in bars. You should be doing stuff like that. You know, as much as we want to sit here and be millennials and say it's all about social media, or it's all about the interwebs, it's definitely not, especially when it comes to local indie wrestling. So I say, instead of, you know, sponsoring some post on Facebook, I think your best bet is actually cutting up little flyers and going out to a logger game and just flyering every single car in the parking lot.
Now, one of the crazy things, right? So Riverfest, one of the biggest festivals happening in lacrosse. You guys had a show there as well. Did anyone flyer that place for their next show?
I don't believe so. I think, you know, a lot of what they did was relied on the in-ring announcer to say when the next show was. But you need to give people that hard paper copy, because then they can see the date. They can have everything with them. They can pull it out of their jean pockets a week later and go, oh my gosh, I completely forgot about this, but luckily I had this piece of paper here. You know, or hey, if you're that into your social media game, you give them a sheet, follow us at whatever on Facebook. It's like, oh, okay, well, let me go to Facebook and follow them. Boom, you have more followers that way. There's so many different ways in which you could promote just a little bit better to improve your chances. You know, because we can sit here and we can say there was a show in Winona the same night that had Gilbert Brown at it.
It was actually in Galesville.
Whatever, I don't care. We can also say the weather was great. We could say that the Loggers were playing for the playoffs, whatever. But at the end of the day, to me, you know, you should at this point be, with how great your shows were on a consistent basis and having drawing those hundreds numbers, and you've been around long enough, that those excuses don't matter anymore. That's like me at my new job 2 years later saying, I'm still kind of new, I don't know what I'm doing. It's like, no, dude, you should know what you're doing by now. So when it comes down to it for a place like, and I'm not trying to piss anybody off, but when it comes down to a place like that, it should get to the point where instead of people coming up with excuses not to go, they should want to go. So, hey, it's nice out, but dude, RCCW's tonight. I'm not going to go outside and spend time outside. RCCW's tonight. We're going to go catch some awesome wrestling. Not, oh, you know what? It's 70 degrees out, which to me means I don't want to sit and have drinks and watch wrestling for 2 hours on a Friday night. Like, to me, that's a total cop-out bullshit thing to say. And, you know, and that's one reason why, you know, I got hot about it inside of one of the Facebook groups once. And then, I mean, people, I think, yelled at me a little bit, but that's just my opinion on it.
I did get kind of yelled at a little bit, but, you know, that's one of the things. No matter what you post on social media, like, one of the great things to do, man, is just, like, read the comments of stories that get posted from, like, news groups or anything like that.
Yeah.
And you just see, like, the sub-threads that pop through that one. There was one here in town, the cops posted one about, like, two kids on a bicycle must have vandalized something in a public parking lot. Some gal is like, hey, you know, why is the cops actually releasing this stuff, like, publicly? They should be able to track these guys using modern technology, not asking anyone for leads. Mm-hmm. That sub-thread became like, oh, so if it was like your property got vandalized, like, wouldn't you want them to find it? It was so weird. It was so weird because it just like kind of dovetailed and no one was actually really paying attention to it.
Right.
Or it was one of those things where, you know, you do something really dumb and then it just kind of like dovetails after that as well. But we're not really going to talk about like dumb shit today, Nick, because you and me probably did one of the dumbest things we've ever done, and we try to keep up with the G1.
Yeah, we did. We tried our best. I know that it seems like you've done a lot better of a job of getting all the little tiny details. I'm pretty up to date, but I'm pretty up to date with all the major matchups. So I've got, you know, I can drop the knowledge on the Omegas, the Naitos, the Okadas. I actually tried watching quite a few of Juice's matches, quite a few of Zack Sabre Jr.'s. But like, I can sit here and say that I probably only watched like two Suzuki matches, and Suzuki's great, but I mean, I knew he wasn't going to go anywhere.
So, like, the only two Suzuki matches you watched were probably the Omega one and the Okada one, which ended up in a draw, which kind of caught a lot of people off guard, Nick. And the reason why it caught a lot of people off guard is because the week that Okada had, where he took a loss to Evil and then takes a draw going into the finals, now he's only got a point ahead?
He's a point ahead of Omega right now.
Point ahead
of
Omega.
He's at 13 points.
Going into the B-Block final. Basically, it's going to come down to these guys. What's going to happen here, Nick?
I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but before we jump into that, I want to jump backward because when it comes to the G1, I heard a lot of backlash when it came to Evil finally taking out Okada.
Backlash? From who?
People being pissed about it.
Why?
The big New Japan podcast. People didn't understand how this Evil guy defeated the long reigning greatest wrestler, you know, quite possibly one of the best runs we've ever seen in pro wrestling. Why it had to be Evil that ended it? What's your rebuttal to something like that?
Okay, so here's my biggest. Okay, Evil probably had the two biggest matches of his career back to back.
Yes,
he had that match against Omega where he got legitimately knocked the fuck out. Like, go back and watch that match. He got legitimately knocked the fuck out on that V trigger.
Well, if you ask Don Callis, he didn't, but continue.
Really? Now, Don Callis says he did not.
Don Callis said he did not.
So let's hear this Don Callis theory. Like, I want to hear it because I haven't
heard
it. Oh,
you can go listen to their podcast, Killing the Town with James Storm. Lance Storm.
Lance Storm. Yeah, Don Callis. Now you're killing your podcast. So his thing is like, no, that's a sell. If that's a sell, that's next level shit.
Dude, I watched that whole match, and I am apparently what happened was Don Callis said that Kenny Omega, because Don Callis has ties with Kenny Omega's family.
Yeah.
And apparently through Kenny, through his family, Don heard that Evil was in fact not knocked out. Now I'm going to go on record. I'm going to say that Kenny Omega is my favorite wrestler right now, hands down. I love watching him. Mm-hmm. Okada, you can definitely make the argument that Okada is a better wrestler, and actually I'd probably agree with that, but just for the whole package, Omega is my favorite guy right now. But I think that dude would have to be lying if he told me that he was completely out, man. Like, there's no doubt to me that he was unconscious. He could barely stand for that second V-trigger that Kenny threw.
Yep.
And then, yeah, the one-wing angel looked just so sloppy, and, you know, it didn't look like he basically tossed Evil off of his shoulders, and Evil just almost did, like, a flat back bump when he's supposed to kind of, like, curl and cave in, but that's partially on the guy on top to maneuvering that, and Evil had no idea where he was. I mean, he had 230
pounds of dead weight at that point in time. Like, the spot that it kind of really sold it to me that it was definitely him getting knocked the fuck out was after that one V trigger, he could have pinned him, but the way that Evil actually kind of just rolled instinct towards the ropes, and he went for the count.
Yep.
And I think it was one of those things where, because he was probably on autopilot, remembered, oh hey, you know, like, one winged angel. You remember the spot or whatever. Like, he was going to kick out of that spot. He went to the ropes as well. And then you can kind of see the frustration on Omega's face a little bit. He looks at Red Shoes. Red Shoes is like, I don't know what to tell you what to do. He's in the ropes, dude. So he had to go and do the one winged angel at that point.
Because Kenny's a great worker. He's like one of the best workers in the world. But I don't think that, I don't think outside of being like, holy shit, this dude's knocked out, I think he would have realized, oh man, Evil's like way too under the ropes for me to cover him right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think if he wouldn't have been like, holy shit, I just knocked this dude out, he would have just continued with his cycle. He would have probably picked him up and threw him up for the one-wing angel and ended it right there. But he's like, oh my God, I just killed this guy. I need to cover him like right now.
Yeah.
Because it was blatantly obvious that Evil was under the ropes. But you know, in a situation like that, we see it all the time where wrestlers are like, dude, I just got to end this right now because this dude's probably hurt. I got to end it. And
which
that's...
is always a weird conversation we're probably going to have at a different date about keeping the reality in pro wrestling, especially when it comes to strikes and stuff like that. Because come on, man, nature's razor blade.
Nice.
So it's always going to be kind of interesting on that one. So anyhow, so Evil comes off that match, comes into the match against Okada. A lot of people said he had no shot whatsoever, and probably you and me would have said the same thing.
Sure.
But he has the natural counter to that Rainmaker with his STO.
Yep.
Because all it is a momentum move. So he gets pushed out, but he comes forward again.
Yep.
And we saw that earlier in the tournament, too, when Elgin ended up countering with his own Rainmaker. You know, like, it just made sense. And it was sooner or later, at some point in the tournament, Okada was going to eat a loss. And I think, like, to build up tension and stuff like that, it happened at the perfect time. It happened at a perfect time. And then, of course, he has the draw against Suzuki.
Yep.
So it's like, Okada's last two matches. He's coming in this last one with two L's, basically.
I just think the big thing with this, and what I heard a lot, is people like, oh, it doesn't make sense. Like, why, out of everybody on there, why was Evil the one to do it? And it's like, oh, you know, I don't buy that bullshit sports element of anybody being able to beat anybody. But it's like, we've talked about this before when Okada came into the... Long Beach show or whatever, where it was that it was, man, this dude's had this amazing run, but he is just fatigued, man.
Yeah.
You know, it's like he came off all these matches and everything like that, and he comes up against a guy like Evil who just had an amazing match with Kenny Omega. And to me, Evil's stock is incredibly up right now.
He's had a hell of a tournament.
I almost don't think there's a better guy in that block to have beaten Okada. And, you know, if you want to talk about storytelling, I don't think there's a better story to tell right now than the one guy that can't beat Okada but seems like he should be able to, goes into the finals while Okada is basically at his worst. You know, he just lost his first match in God knows how long. He goes to a draw with Suzuki, and now it's come to this. It's come to Kenny Omega v. Okada in the finals of the whatever B block. Are we A block or B block for
B
those
block.
Two? The B block, whatever. I think storytelling wise, it doesn't get much better than this. Plus, Okada was the champion of the tournament last year, and he had three losses. So,
yeah,
technically, he only has one loss. What the fuck more do you want?
I don't know.
People just complain sometimes and complain, and God, it fucking pisses me off. It's like I go listen to my favorite podcasters, and I'm like, I love these guys, and then they spit bullshit like that, and I'm like, fuck, man. Why do you guys got to complain so much?
I don't know.
It's like, why can't you at least try to rationalize into liking it? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't know. I think sometimes people just buy into their own theories, and it's reactionary without taking time to actually think about it. So like, maybe that's part of it.
Don't get me wrong. I said on this podcast, I thought it would have been great for Okada to go through the entire tournament undefeated and win the G1 and continue this crazy-ass run, so when he finally loses, it's a big deal. But at the end of the day, if you go back and watch the Okada Evil match, it's like, yeah, it makes sense. Mm-hmm. Evil kept up with him like tick for tack, and dude had a great match. And you know, sometimes it's just, you know, I just don't think there's a better time for him to have lost than the end of this grueling ass G1 tournament. You know, it's like, how many guys end up going through this tournament completely undefeated?
Not many.
Yeah. So it's like, it makes sense. We're nearing the end of it. To make things interesting, you know, we gave Omega a loss a few weeks back, or last week or whatever. And, you know, I just don't see what the argument is there. Let's go back full circle here. So we want to talk about, obviously, the finals, B-block finals. We got Okada and Omega. A-block finals, we got Tanahashi and Naito. No shenanigans here, Jesse. It's one of the, you know, it's one or the other. There's no, like, loss, draws, and some other guy possibly gets in. We know it's one of these four guys, or two of these four guys, I guess, that are going to be in the actual climax. What are your thoughts?
Well, that's always a good question, Nick. You know, looking at the A-block, and you're like, oh, man. By the time you're done, you're like, it should have been no one but Tanahashi and Naito in that situation. You know, Ibushi had a good tournament. Ishii had a good tournament.
I really thought Tanahashi was going to fall off a little bit here, but
yeah. Zack Sabre Jr. had a good tournament as well. Bad Luck Fale was in it till the very end. It was one of those things where a lot of pieces fell into place, but Tanahashi, of course, the ace, still there. Naito, even though he ran into a few roadblocks there, he took a couple losses, he's still there right now. You know, you almost got to look at what matchup. You're going to have to burn one of, four potential, money matchups on this one. And the big one that a lot of people are talking about is Okada Naito. This has been the match that a lot of people have been talking about. It's going to be a Wrestle Kingdom main event here within the next, year or two. There's a lot of people saying that it should have been the Wrestle Kingdom main event this year. But now, looking at the way the G1 is set up, Sumo Hall always sells out for the finals.
Yep.
Why would you want to burn Okada Naito at a building that's already going to be sold out?
Yeah, you wouldn't.
You wouldn't. So that leaves maybe Okada Tanahashi. Now, there's only a lot of people that are saying, oh, man, we've seen that match so many times. Have you really seen that match? They've had, seven or eight matches over the span of what?
Yeah, but I don't remember. Their last match was, 2 years ago?
Their last match was actually last year, G1. It was a draw.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that was the draw that basically allowed Goto to go to, you know.
Right.
The fucking finals. It was great. But it's
I was thinking of Wrestle Kingdom.
Well, Wrestle Kingdom, it would have been Wrestle Kingdom 2016.
Yeah.
So it's been a while, you know, but it's one of those things where you can do that match again and people are going to be excited about that one because you have the natural rivalry between these two guys and they always perform. I mean, how the fuck can you get sick of these two guys wrestling when every time they go out there, they put on fucking 5-star matches?
Yep.
They don't shit the bed.
Yep.
And you're going to fucking bitch and moan about seeing a match for the 8th fucking time.
I'm not going to bitch about it, but I'm going to make my rationale for why I think what I think is going to happen. So I think Naito has to beat Tanahashi.
Mm-hmm.
I think Naito is going to win the G1, and I think he's going to main event Wrestle Kingdom. When we look at the other side of the card, you make a very compelling argument about Okada not wanting to waste that match when you're going to see it in a couple months, main eventing the Tokyo Dome. So my theory is Omega needs – I told you this in the Facebook chat thing.
Yeah.
Omega needs to beat Okada here. I mean, it's just a natural progressing story where it needs to come to a culmination here that Omega gets the upper hand. Now, I saw this theory, and I thought this was a decent theory, and I know that you kind of – obviously, with your guess of Okada Tanahashi, it kind of shits on that a little bit. But – I personally thought it'd be a great idea for Omega to pull a fast one on Okada and beat him within a couple minutes. I think that'd be great. I think that'd be a great way to finish that matchup. Have him throw a V-trigger right away, hit him with a one-wing angel. Boom, ends it. You know, people are expecting this five-star classic. They're going to get all pissed off about it. But let's save their finale where Omega finally gets the one-uppings on Okada in a 45-minute classic for later on down the line. I think Omega and Naito, like you said, obviously, Sumo Hall is going to sell it regardless, but you know, I don't see the problem with doing an Omega Naito finals. And the only reason I say that is because at the end of the day, I think Naito needs to win, and I totally agree with you. Naito and Okada doesn't make sense here in the main event, so that's why I'm throwing Omega there. Naito gets the upper hand, beats Omega, and then we get Omega Ibushi at Wrestle Kingdom. Now, I will say this: I honestly would not be surprised if Cody Rhodes comes out and costs Omega the match on Saturday.
The match against Naito?
The match against Okada on Saturday.
Okay. Intrigued. Now is Cody actually going to be in Japan?
Probably not.
Okay, so that's going to be a tough one there. I like the theory about the two-minute, because the one thing that Omega hasn't been able to do to Okada yet is hit that one-winged angel. I mean, he's almost been in the ring with this guy for 2 fucking hours.
Yeah.
And he's never hit that
move. Never hit one.
So at some point in time, he's got to hit that move. If you're looking at maybe the grind of the G1 finally getting to Okada, it almost would make sense to do something quick and rapid like that. And it's something that people would not expect. So depending on what you're looking at, because like A Block's going to have their final on the 11th. The 12th is going to be the B Block. So depending on how the 11th plays out, that finish very well could be there. Now, one of the other things you got to also look at, too, is with the possibility of, let's say, with Okada. If Okada ends up getting past Omega, even if they draw, because you got to remember, this time around, it's a 30-minute time limit instead of the 60.
Yep.
So if Omega couldn't do it within 60 and 60 twice,
how is he going to do it in 30?
He's going to have to do it in 30. So this thing could be a fucking sprint.
Yeah, and that's what I think you can kind of expect from it.
Okay, so what would happen if Okada ends up winning the whole thing?
That's a great question. I mean, when's the last time that was done? In like the 90s?
Yeah, probably. I think when Muda.
Won.
Yeah,
right.
You know, so that's tough because then.
And that was before they started doing the whole Wrestle Kingdom.
But what they used to do, though, was if whoever won that wasn't champion, we get the title shot in September. But if you're already looking at potential opponents lined up for Okada past this G1.
Are we looking at an evil Okada Wrestle Kingdom main event, Jesse?
No. You might be looking at that as like a Dominion main event.
Sure.
You know, Suzuki's going to have another title shot sometime down the line this fall. So there's still a lot of matchups. There's still a lot of wrestling between now and Wrestle Kingdom. It's
ultimately, we are getting Naito and Okada.
Ultimately, we're either getting Okada Naito or we're getting Okada Mega at Wrestle Kingdom.
So, you really, okay.
Yeah, we're going to get one of those two matches. Like, the hot match right now might be Okada Omega.
Right.
You know, the hottest act might be Naito.
Yep.
But Omega might be, in the Western eyes, a little bit hotter right now than Naito.
Oh, you watch any of those, the G1 Climax shows, I mean, Omega might be one of the hottest dudes on the whole card.
Yeah.
And he's a gaijin.
It's just one of those things, you know, he's over like Rover.
Yeah, he's over like Rover, even in Japan.
So, you almost got to wonder where they're going to go with that one. It's going to be fun, Nick. Because we're back doing the English commentary. I got so used to doing the Japanese commentary.
I honestly didn't mind it. I started getting used to it.
It was so easy to follow.
I know, and I started getting to the point now where I'm like trying to come up with, I'm like, I wonder what that means, and I wonder what that, you know, it's like I'm trying to teach myself some Japanese commentary, you know.
But at the same time, though, it's like the excitement level and certain words translate over really well. So it's going to be really interesting to see how the finals kind of play out. But there's a lot of really good matches. Like, even on the A-Block final show, you got Ibushi against Goto. That's going to be a lot of fun. Ishii and Zack Sabre Jr., Bagalak Fale, Yuji Nagata, Togen Makabe take on Yoshihashi. Yoshihashi is like, he had a really interesting tournament to me, Nick. He always looked like he was that kid who was super fucking nervous to go out and like, oh, fuck, I might die tonight.
Right, yeah. I said this on a podcast, our last podcast or the podcast before, but I was actually pretty impressed with Yoshihashi as of late in the matches that I got to see with him in there. Looking over the last two nights, I just can't believe Yano has as many points as Zack Sabre Jr., I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's just Yano, man. Like, he's there to be kind of like the spoiler. You know, and it's interesting too because Yano has actually got a winning record in the G1 against Suzuki.
That's crazy.
It's crazy to think, and especially with
it's
how
like literally the most serious guy against like the most not serious.
Like
guy.
How batshit crazy has Suzuki been in this tournament? Like almost every fucking match, he's took that thing out into the ground and hit a dude with a chair and throw him against the wall. Yeah. It's insane. Mm-hmm. Tonga against Sonata, that should be interesting. Elgin and Juice. That's going to be a lot of fun.
Both guys probably in line for a U.S. title shot.
Yeah, I wouldn't doubt it. That's going to be a lot of fun there. So, yeah, a lot of really good wrestling coming up here on the 11th and the 12th, and, of course, on the 13th as well. If you don't have New Japan World, I think both Nick and myself can attest that, hey, maybe you should go out and try it out, man.
I'm going to tell you, man, again, this is not just because of the G1, but this is the first time in a long time that I can remember trying extremely hard to keep up with wrestling events. And, you know, it's like I'll turn on WWE and I'll watch like old school Raws and stuff like that to get a glimpse of the story. But I'll be honest with you, Jesse, I don't find myself a lot going back and watching WWE Network matches just for the match content. And I really honestly don't do that at this point right now for current wrestling. I don't. You know what I mean? It's like I can't watch Raw or SmackDown. I feel like it's the same stuff every week. I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow, the G1's been going on since what? The beginning of July? It's been going on for a while. And,
at least
you know,
around July 14th.
It's been going on since maybe mid-July. Mm-hmm. And you look at it, and Kenny Omega has his, whatever, five-move moveset. He has, like, the Fireman Carry, Moonsault, the V-Trigger, blah, blah, blah. Okada has the same thing where he has his, you know, his key moves.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like I've seen these dudes wrestle how many matches, and every time it feels special and it feels different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like I feel like I don't get that when I watch anything else right now, wrestling wise.
Do you think a lot of that is just like the way it's presented?
Maybe. I don't know what it is. And that's the thing. It's probably it's just my style of enjoying wrestling and stuff, but it's like I feel like I don't need the soap opera backstage antics with what I'm watching. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like sometimes with Raw and SmackDown, I feel like I need that to get involved in a story. But for some reason with this, it's like, dude, half the stories that are going on right now, like I've created in my head for what's happening. Like this whole Omega Okada story.
Yeah.
It's like I haven't watched a promo package or anything that's came out and said what I'm thinking about this, but I've myself internally like sculpted this like storyline, which I think holds up pretty well. And if you ask anybody else, they have very similar feelings towards the Okada Omega, the entire angle. And it's because these dudes are just so good at telling it in the ring that you don't need to waste time with freaking Lala backstage as she talks to you and asks you questions about whatever, and then you need to go do 30 video packages to get over. Obviously WWE has some great video packages.
Oh,
but,
fabulous video packages.
You know, you don't, I'm just saying, like, I'm saying, like, for a lot of these things, you can rely on in-ring content to follow a story, and I think that's awesome.
So you're telling me you don't need Yoshihashi feuding with Makabe over a spilt cup of coffee?
No.
No? Not at all? No,
I don't. Nope.
Shampoo.
Yeah.
Not even shampoo?
No, shampoo. Conditioner.
You don't think...
I think that's important.
You don't think Ishii would have a hell of a supermarket fight with Goto?
Oh, that'd be great. I will say Booker T and Austin at the grocery store was like one of the greatest things of all time.
Oh, it's amazing. I don't know. I still think it's a lot with the presentation. Just even going down to like the lighting. You watch a WWE show. It's so well lit. You see everyone in the crowd.
Yep.
New Japan show, you don't see crowd shit.
Yep.
You know? So you're kind of more focused on the matches and like the noise that the crowd is making, as opposed to, wow, these guys aren't standing. These guys aren't doing nothing.
Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think by now it's, I feel like if it was just a novelty or if it was like trying to be in with the crowd, like it would have worn off. But I feel like I've watched so much wrestling on it that it's like, I just really like it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say?
I know what you're saying. Maybe
after, you know, Wrestle Kingdom, I can see, you know, being like after, you know, the six-star match, it's like, I'm going to get New Japan Wrestling and shove it to WWE and show them why. And it's like, even if you wanted to try to make that case for maybe me or you, Jesse, it's like, we've watched so much of this content that it's gotten to the point now where it's like, I just enjoy watching it. You know what I mean? I would rather watch some random G1 tournament that has, you know, Yano and Omega on it, in Japanese commentary, then I would rather watch Monday Night Raw. And that's how it is nowadays. I don't know.
Yeah, just the way it goes. Oh, okay. So after we just got done kind of, you know, bad mouthing WWE again. Let's move on. Next week is actually a big week for WWE. Of course, SummerSlam weekend, and We got one of our big main events coming up here on the SmackDown brand. It's Shinsuke Nakamura getting a one-on-one shot against Jinder Mahal for the WWE Heavyweight Championship.
Yeah, this is one that we haven't talked about a lot yet. We talked, obviously, in length about Raw's main event. We've done that a few times.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes down to SmackDown, this will be kind of interesting because you also have Baron Corbin that's kind of lingering on the outside with the briefcase.
Yep. And Corbin's got a match the same show against John Cena. That's a big test for the young man, who's not really that young. He's actually older than me.
Yeah, he's...
yeah. So, yeah.
That's pretty funny. But young in the business, I guess.
Young in business.
But, yeah, it should be really interesting. I think we were all so certain on John Cena versus Jinder Mahal at SummerSlam that the whole Nakamura train maybe took us by surprise a little bit.
Yeah.
But it should, I don't know. I don't really know what to expect. This is definitely going to be probably Nakamura's biggest match in his WWE career. You know, obviously he had matches against Samoa Joe and Sami Zayn in NXT and it was all this great stuff, but this will probably be, he'll have the more eyes on him than he ever has in the States. I think that there's no doubt about it, especially on SummerSlam. You know, that's one of the marquee pay-per-views for WWE. But he's going up against Jinder Mahal. And, you know, I think a big thing with Jinder Mahal is people are saying his matches are boring. And for Shinsuke, I think he's kind of getting the same bad rap. So this will be an opportunity for both guys to kind of put up or shut up. Me and you talked about it, and I'm fairly well convinced that we are going to see a cash-in after
the
matchup.
Yeah, it almost feels like it's telegraphed, just how well it's set up. So think about this, all right? So if you're WWE, you could have Corbin lose to Cena somewhere along the line. If that match is on before Nakamura and Mahal, almost bank on a fucking cash in.
Yep.
Almost bank on it.
It's a setup.
It's a total setup. It's a work, as they would say in certain circles.
Right.
Nakamura and Mahal, if you want to take the belt off of Mahal without really hurting his rep, the best way to probably do that would be Money in the Bank.
Yep.
If you want to cost Nakamura a match without hurting his rep,
yep.
Best way to do that is Money in the Bank.
Yep.
It's unfortunate it's come down to this, Nick.
Yep.
That you know, the first time you're actually going to see, you know, from all standpoints, a lot of people were so excited to see Nakamura into the WWF, all that stuff, to where he is right now. Everyone was kind of like, okay, we're going to give Mahal a chance here. Let's see what he can do.
Yep.
I almost could draw you out this match right now on paper. I have a pencil in my hand, and I have some paper. I could draw this match out. It's going to be very much, I think, a little gesturing in the beginning. The Singh brothers taking a couple of Kinshasas.
Probably.
You know, you're going to see the Exploder suplex. You're probably going to see Mahal actually take a Kinshasa, and then you're going to see Baron Corbin come out.
Yep.
His skinny, fat dumpster fire, as John Cena would like to refer to him on SmackDown. That's always a weird phrase, a skinny fat dumpster fire.
Yeah,
that's
not shitting on anybody or anything.
No, no, not at all. Not at all. I mean, come on, man. I mean, a skinny fat dumpster fire is definitely a compliment in the world of professional wrestling. Excitement level, I'm not. The only thing I'm excited about for SummerSlam right now is that Fatal 4-Way match.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Because, I mean, think about it. Like, they got hit with the injury bug again. Like, Bayley's out, so Bayley won't get her title match.
Mm-hmm.
So it's ended up going to be either Sasha Banks or Nia Jax. Give us a fresh matchup. Hopefully we'll get Nia Jax in that situation. That'd be really kind of interesting as well. If you're looking over on the SmackDown side for the women, I have no fucking clue what's going on over there right now.
It's actually Natalya versus Naomi.
That is right, because we talked about that on a previous podcast. That's how fucked it is. The only thing I'm excited about is, like, maybe we'll see the finale of the Faction Files.
Yeah. See, that's the thing. Here's what I wanted to say. And we were talking about the differences between New Japan and the differences between WWE. And I think the reason why I like what I watch in New Japan so much is that it's not so gimmicky. You know what I mean? It's like, I feel like there's not so many gimmicks. And if there are gimmicks, it's like they know
it's a gimmick.
They know it's a gimmick.
Kind of like Evo and his gigantic fucking plastic sickle.
When it comes to WWE, it's like, to me, Money in the Bank is a gimmick.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's a guy carrying around a blue-ass briefcase.
Yep.
Like, it's just, it's weird. It's a fucking Punjabi prison match.
Yeah.
Is a gimmick.
That's a hell of a gimmick.
Like, what the fuck is that?
Well, you know,
but,
Nick.
But here's the Fashion Files, okay? Now, that's a fucking weird gimmick, but
it works.
It works. And they know it's like, they act like how they, you can tell when they're doing it, they're like, we're trying to get pops here. With the Punjabi prison, they're like, we're professional wrestlers inside of a bamboo cage.
Steel Enforced Bamboo Cage.
Hey, I want my title shot. I have a blue briefcase. Blah. It's like, come on, man. I don't know. It's just there's so much gimmicky shit with WWE that it just sometimes I feel like it takes away a little bit from the storytelling in the ring. Like, you know, I kind of understand a little bit, sort of, maybe it's because I'm not following the program very much, but Shane McMahon being like the guest ref for AJ Styles and Kevin Owens, like, it's just like, why? What's the point?
I don't know. Probably because Owens is probably going to end up feuding with Shane McMahon at some point. But, okay, so, you know, the argument could be made then at some point in time, WWE, with the older abundance of gimmicks, is that very much movie making with an abundance of CGI in comparison to movie making with just camera trickery?
I think at the end of the day, I can't honestly answer that. But I think at the end of the day, for me, it's like, I feel like I watch, and I'm sitting here shitting on WWE, and in no way, you know, my opinions aren't say all end all. I just think I'm a different wrestling fan. You know, as you're probably, you look for things that are different in wrestling.
Yeah.
Somebody else looks for things. You know, for me, when it comes down to wrestling, not to sound like I'm some, you know, fucking
hipster mark,
but yeah. I like, you know, it's like, it's weird. Like, you look back in Okada and Omega match, like, I like just how raw and just how much that feels like a professional athletic event. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But then it comes down to, like, the big thing that everybody shit on when it came to Omega and Yano and Omega getting his feet taped up and he was bouncing off the ropes. Like, I love that, too. I think that's hilarious. But for some reason, to me, it's like, yeah, I grew up with it and stuff. But, you know, having Austin spraying beer all over Vince McMahon just doesn't resonate with me. You know, people talk about that being as like one of the biggest moments in wrestling history. And for me, I'm just like, I don't really care about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, show me what you do in the ring. And then it probably makes me sound like a fickle, you know, piece of shit because I don't necessarily think the Attitude Era, people consider it to be one of the greatest things ever. But honestly, all I saw from the Attitude Era was it was just a bunch of gimmicks. I know that they sold more tickets than they ever sold and ratings were higher than ever. And it was one of the greatest times in wrestling history. But I don't enjoy the Attitude Era very much. It's not my style. It's not something I like. And I think that says a lot about what I do like. Like right now, I love New Japan. Like I love what New Japan's doing right now. And like I just told you, it's not because of backstage interviews I'm seeing or promos I'm seeing or whatever. It's the stuff I'm seeing in the ring that makes me so in love with it. You know what I mean? So I think that's just the type of wrestling fan that I am. I can sit here and bash WWE all that I want, but at the end of the day, you know, Johnny Smith over there might love what WWE is doing because he likes wrestling for different reasons than I do. I don't know.
The thing I always loved about wrestling, no matter what, is just the story of the match. I don't need a lot of things around it. Cage match is perfectly fine with me. You know, like, I don't mind in barbed wire every once in a while, you know? Like, sure. You gotta like death matches, but when it gets to the overabundance of things, start adding fucking piranhas to a death match. It might be a little too much. If you add Steel and Force Bamboo to a cage match, it might be a little too much.
Like, Big Show versus Big Cass with Enzo Amore in a shark tank above the ring.
Why is he in a fucking shark tank?
I don't know, but
cage?
I saw that was that's on the card. I don't know
that,
why.
That's so weird. That you know what I actually hope kind of happens?
What?
The cage just actually falls.
And he dies?
Not he dies. No, it just falls.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense.
All right, cool. So one of the interesting things that got brought up over the weekend was the it always seems to get brought up anytime something new pops up. It is the phrase, killing the business, Nick. Now, this past weekend over in Combat Zone Wrestling, Leo Rush actually had his going away match. Now, Leo Rush, of course,
NXT.
Signed with NXT.
Yep.
One of the great young names on the indie scene. Got a chance to see him over at Legacy Pro at the beginning of the year. The guy's a legit fucking deal. He can go. The spot was actually with one of the most talked about names in indie wrestling right now, and that's Joey Janela. For those who don't know who Joey Janela is, he probably booked one of the best shows of the year with Joey Janela's Spring Break down there during WrestleMania weekend. If you haven't had a chance to watch that one, it's interesting. It's so fucking batshit crazy. It's fucking amazing. But anyhow, the spot was a sunset flip powerbomb off a ladder through a table. Now we've seen the spot 100 times, you know, especially in WWE television and stuff like that. What you don't necessarily see is the no sell. Leo Rush got right back up to his feet and basically no sold the move. Now, Nick, I gotta ask you, is that killing the business?
You know, you go listen to all these other experts and stuff like that that talk about what killing the business is and what's not killing the business.
God damn, it's killing the business.
And I think technically everything that's done in all wrestling is killing the business in some sorts. You look at some of the moves that are done in the ring, they're now, if you want to like get super detailed about it, it's like, mm-hmm. is this killing the business more than, you know, Kane apparently opening up the, you know, the mat and dragging somebody to a literal hell? I don't know. You know, at the end of the day, I'm pretty sure most people weren't watching that. Like, holy shit, that guy is literally, now he's probably visiting Satan. He got dragged out of hell.
I don't know. Is it killing the business more than Kane fucking a corpse? It actually ended up being Triple H fucking a corpse.
Wow, yeah.
Yep.
And I don't know. It kind of depends on what your opinion on killing the business was. I don't know. I didn't see this video. I don't know. Did he get up and do like the like no sell? Then all of a sudden he hit him with like a clothesline, and then he sold after that. Like he was like, I'm so adrenaline right now that
no,
I can
I
get
think
up
it was basically an adrenaline no sell, kind of similar to, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but the famous pile driver spot with Lawler and Road Warrior Hawk.
Oh yeah, I've seen that.
So yeah, so basically Hawk no sell the pile driver, which was the most traditional basic that's going to kill a man move.
Yep.
Now, because of his neck development and stuff like that, he was able to absorb it. Yeah. But, you know, at the time, everyone's like, whoa, holy shit, that dude got up from that. So getting the sunset flip powerbomb through a table and stuff like that for Leo Rush, who, you know, a lot of people want to say, oh, come on, he can't be that tough. He's only 5'4" or whatever. For him to no-sell that, like, I can understand the concept of adrenaline. Because we've seen some weird fucking shit with adrenaline, Nick. Have you ever heard the story of a mother who flipped over a car?
I have heard this story.
High on adrenaline to go save her kid.
Yes, I have heard that story.
Yeah, we've heard that story a million times. Sometimes adrenaline does weird things. Hulk Hogan's comeback, for instance. How is a guy getting the fucking shit kicked out of him for about 5-10 minutes all of a sudden start hulking up?
Yeah.
You know, like, did that kill the business?
That's a good that's actually a pretty damn good point, man.
Like honestly, so if you're looking at adrenaline and no selling, it makes total sense. I mean, it's just one of those things where it's like, it's not going to kill the fucking business. What's going to kill the fucking business is being archaic and not changing with the times.
Yeah, and I think that's the big thing. You know, one of the things that people always talk about is, you know, is a guy like a, you know, in a match like, you know, Okada, his finisher's the Rainmaker, but sometimes he has to hit that Rainmaker like 4 fucking times to put somebody away. And people are like, oh, well, you know, that's killing the business. But it's like, you just have to keep going. You know, if we were still today spending 20 minutes in the ring doing headlocks and arm ringers, people wouldn't give a shit about pro wrestling, right? And when you think about what Leo Rush must have done, think about how hot, like, think about if me and you were sitting in that crowd, right? And we're just watching this match unfold, and these dudes are doing all these crazy spots because that's how it is a lot of Leo Rush's matches. Dude goes through the table, but he pops right the fuck back up. Like, he just no-sells it. And, you know, and it's not like a, you know, it's not like a, oh, something got fucked up, no sell. It's like it was intent in what it was doing and trying to tell a story.
Yep.
Me and you probably would have been like, and we're huge wrestling fans, we would have probably been like, oh, dude, that was fucking cool.
Like,
we never
shit.
See that. Yeah. We never see that.
Mm-hmm.
That's super cool, man. Like, how cool is that? That something like that just happened. Like, good for them for thinking of implementing that in their match story. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I think that's like it's just an ever-going evolution of what it is that we see on a night-to-night basis. You know, when it came to New Japan Pro Wrestling, there's been quite a few matches where there have been crazy-ass, you know, chair spots and table spots. Freaking with Evil, when it came to, dude, one of his regular moves is he puts a chair on a dude's neck and throws him into the turnbuckle.
Yeah.
That used to literally kill people in wrestling.
Yeah, or he just puts it around his head and then swings the other chair like a fucking Louisville Slugger.
Yeah!
Yeah.
And now, it basically for him, it's just like a kind of a sort of a signature move, but it doesn't finish matches.
No.
And that's what I'm trying to say. Like, yeah, things are just changing. That's just how it is in the wrestling business. So I think people that, as we talked about at the very beginning, that are complaining about things like that are probably just finding reasons to complain. Because at the end of the day, you know, do you really think a guy going through a table and no-selling it is going to kill the business? Like, do you, if anybody wants to find out about wrestling, they can literally go on the internet to find out about wrestling. You know what really kills a business is wrestlers that have been around for a really long time and then end up killing their family. That's what would kill the business.
Yeah, that almost did kill the business. What else kills the business?
What's that?
Bad business practices like they did with WCW.
Exactly.
That kills the business.
That kills the business. Not guys, you know, doing once-in-a-lifetime spots where they no-sell a table, you know, maneuver that's nationally seen. That's total bullshit.
Yeah, what are you going to do?
I'm not going to do much about it, are you?
No, I don't give a fuck.
Well, if you don't give a fuck, we should probably wrap up here because I know you got some stuff to do. I'm going home and making kebabs tonight.
Oh.
Or I might try to convince the fiance to bring home some McDonald's. I don't know yet.
Nick, we always have this argument. With the money that you could be saving watching New Japan Pro Wrestling, you can skip out on having McDonald's
That's
for this
true,
month.
That's true, I guess. Yeah, maybe.
You know what? You can have kebabs.
Oh.
Flight of the Conchords. You can have a kebab. For the you know, the cutest girl you've ever seen.
I don't like that.
With a kebab. Come on, you never listened to Flight of the Conchords?
Well, she's not going to be. She's taking advantage of a JCPenney that's closing nearby in Winona with her mom.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So they're going to go out there and they're going to try to
I like how
you,
that phrase is so terrible, taking advantage.
Yeah, well, the deals they have there. So they're going to try to take advantage of some awesome deals.
Mm-hmm.
But she doesn't get done with work until like 7:30. So I imagine they're going to be out there till like 9. So she's not home till like 9:30. It's like,
and that's almost your bedtime.
It's like, do I want to really make kebabs? Because you can reheat kebabs, but nothing's better than a kebab fresh off the grill. You know what I mean?
You can have kebabs with Brady though.
Yeah, I guess I could, but there's onions on there. Dogs can eat onions.
That's true, and it's true. And you could watch Houston against Carolina.
Oh, is that on tonight?
Yeah, that's a preseason game.
Guess what? Not gonna watch that.
Oh, come on.
There's nobody I care to watch in that game.
No McCaffrey?
The only thing that I actually care to watch is probably see what DeAndre Hopkins' involvement is with the offense, but he probably won't get thrown the ball that much.
He might. He might play the first series.
I might actually kind of be interested to see how Deshaun Watson plays, because if he ends up starting this year, he is my golden ticket to being successful.
Now, is he actually starting this game or not?
I thought Savage was starting.
I heard Savage was starting. I know there was rumors that Watt was going to play the first two series, but then they nixed that. And it was around the same time they were talking about Cam Newton actually not playing this game, but he's actually going to play the first two series as well.
Yeah, see, that's the big thing about preseason. This is an opportunity where the rookies that I drafted in my Dynasty Rookie League, in our Dynasty League, that I want to see them. And I don't have anybody on.
You know them. You know them. Name drop them.
Who?
Your rookies.
That I have?
Yeah.
I have O.J. Howard, the tight end for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Okay.
Marlon Mack. The running back for the Indianapolis Colts, who by news is still like third or fourth on the depth chart, but definitely I think has the highest upside.
Gore
does
have an injury right now too.
Yeah, I think he has the highest upside to eventually become the bell cow for that backfield. So hopefully he'll do something here over the next a couple months. Donnell Pumphrey, the heir to the Darren Sproles role in Philadelphia, picked him up because he was a leading FBS rusher. So to me, what that means is dude can obviously run the ball, and if LeGarrette Blount ever goes down, who I have, I mean, this guy could technically possibly fill an early down role even though he's tiny, because if he had all those rushing yards, it must mean that he was doing something right, and he ran a pro-style offense in college, so that's one of the big reasons why I picked him up.
Mm-hmm.
And then who's the cat that I picked up out of New York? I can't even remember his name. Now I'm embarrassed.
Receiver for the Jets?
Yep, receiver for the Jets.
Oh.
I don't think his last name's Shepard. I think it's something else.
No, it's not Schuster.
It's not Schuster.
It's
Schuster is out of Pittsburgh, I think.
Yeah, yeah. He's actually high on the depth chart, too.
Maybe it is Shepard. Now we're just sitting here doing things, but I want to check and see if it is, because now I'm curious. My team name is A Butt, because I also picked up Jake Butt.
Yeah, you got him off the waiver wires.
I got Jake Butt off the waiver wires because they don't think he's going to be back for a little while, but I think that he could definitely take over as a prominent tight end once he starts getting implemented into the office. Stewart, that's who it was.
We were close.
Yep. Ardarius Stewart. Lots of talk about him possibly being in the starting lineup because they have a lot of injuries right now. Because
they have a lot of injuries, and also they're at the point where they're trying to find anything that sticks.
And he was an early draft pick, so he'll probably get an opportunity. And if dude kills it in New York, then all of a sudden, boom, I got another good starting wideout. So I was really happy with my draft. I actually traded away the rights of my second-round pick next year for the top third-round pick this year because I really,
And that's the pick that you got you Pumphrey.
Pumphrey, yeah. That was really buying into his stock. I know that I know he's not the tallest guy, but, man, we've seen little, you know, kind of 5'7", 5'8" guys make big impacts in the NFL as third down backs, and sometimes even taking over multiple, you know, like the guys like a Danny Woodhead, like a Darren Sproles, who's, you know, been a top guy as far as, you know.
And a lot of people always kind of figure
PPR
that,
leagues.
That Barry Sanders was 5'10".
Yeah.
Yep. Plus, remember, in the Atlanta Giants, sometimes it's the dog with the biggest heart that wins.
Yeah.
Like a Daniel Bryan. Anyhow, nice. So my rookies, we went Mixon in the first round, Foreman in the second, and Godwin in the third. I kind of like what I got. I really like what I got because I have a potential for two franchise running backs in the first two rounds. And Godwin's going to benefit in that system down in Tampa Bay because if you're looking at the other receivers, you have Mike Evans, you have DeSean Jackson. Godwin's got a chance to be that third guy.
Oh, and Jackson has had a lot of trouble staying healthy. So
exactly. But, you know, Jackson spreads the field. Godwin can do the same thing, but you're talking about maybe him playing the slot position. He's got good hands. He had a great career in Penn State.
Yep.
So hopefully those players kind of work out for me. Because I really don't want to draft again in the top five.
It's not always a bad thing, especially when you have the options. Like you have the option to get a guy like Mixon. I mean, you're like, yeah, okay.
It's not, but like looking at my team and the things I needed help on, you know, like this is definitely going to be very tremendous. And I think like my team last year was not really off the pace. It just certain things kind of hurt it. Like lack of consistent running back play was one of the big things, especially with Doug Martin. And Chris, you know, Charles Sims, or whatever the fuck his name is, Chris Sims, you know, it doesn't really matter. But with a lack of good running back play there, that really kind of hurt me, you know. And like the year before that, it was the same thing. It was injuries kept on piling up. So it's like, okay, now I feel good about my team. I got some young guys, especially even the last year's draft, had a good draft there. You know, it's just very much, can pieces kind of fall into place? Can I actually have a pretty decent record and actually put up maybe 110 points on average?
Yeah, that'd be nice. That's the big thing about our league. We have an extra wide receiver slot, so 110 points is kind of right around what you'd want to be hitting.
Yeah, exactly.
And a lot of it sometimes is trying to build depth, and that comes through the draft because when you're in a league like the one that we're in and it comes down to guys, you know, simply if they have something they like, they'll never drop it. You need to build your bench through the draft.
Yeah,
or get
exactly.
Lucky, so
you get lucky. Actually, a lot of that is just, and then don't make shitty ass trades either.
Yeah, do not do that because I think I don't know if you have, but I've definitely been on the wrong end of one of those. So
I was on the wrong end of one trade. I've only made two trades. All right. So these are the two trades I made, Nick. I made first year. It was basically, I needed a quarterback going into a week. Dalton had a bye and Roethlisberger was hurt. So those are my two quarterbacks at that time. I think I had Jones, Landry Jones, but I didn't want to start him. So I'm like, oh, fuck, I need another quarterback, you know? Mm-hmm. So Taylor was actually sitting on someone's bench. I traded Jeremy Hill for Taylor, which I think in the long run, that actually proved pretty wise because I think Taylor actually has a pretty good shot of being my starting quarterback this year.
Yeah.
And a lot of that's going to be how does he do preseason. Because if you're looking at it, you're looking at Roethlisberger's last year. Dalton's got so many weapons, but at the same time, though, Dalton's always been bottom top 10, somewhere around 15, stuff like that. Taylor, top 10 running backs, top 10 quarterback based on his legs alone. So he's got an opportunity there, so that might be interesting. And then the other trade was I needed running backs, like hardcore. So I traded Mike Evans, which a lot of people would be like, why the fuck would you do that in a dynasty? For Martin and Sims at the time, which seemed like a pretty decent trade.
You got a young running back in Martin, and you got his handcuff in Sims, who's also a young guy.
Yep.
For Mike Evans, who was very young, but I'm pretty sure in the prior year he might have been injured, but I do know that there was some – him and Jameis Winston didn't really
have
a connection.
They didn't have the chemistry that first year and second
year.
They had the chemistry.
Yep. So that was kind of the fault there.
So,
but
I mean, you know, you're going to have situations like that from time to time. But you know what? I feel good about my team going forward. I like the guys I have. You know, I think I could be in play.
Fuck it.
Yeah, basically. That's the motto of this podcast, I guess.
Yep, definitely the motto of this podcast. Again, if this is luckily on iTunes, thank God. If they haven't dropped yet, make sure to keep up with the page because we will be dropping a new show, Red Guy Gaming, and another Deech and Dash podcast. So stay tuned for that. Facebook.com/TheGrappleTalk. Otherwise, at The Grapple Talk on Twitter. This Day in Wrestling History, we're just going to skip it because because we got to start getting – we got to kind of wrap up here. We're running out of time.
Definitely.
And you know what? If you want to check out what happened in this day in wrestling history, cageside seats.com. Definitely not our most tidy podcast we've probably ever recorded, but hey,
no.
It's good to at least get in here and start talking some wrestling every once in a while.
Definitely. We'll be back definitely probably sometime next week. It's a big one because we got to talk G1 reaction. We'll probably preview NXT because that's looking like a really good show. And then we'll kind of be ho-hum about SummerSlam.
Cool. funsies.
Cool beans.
All right, guys. So thanks for joining us on Grapple Talk. We'll catch you guys next time. Stay classy. And as always, support independent wrestling.